Welcome to this episode of our show, True Data Ops. I'm your host, Kent Graziano, the Data Warrior. In each episode, we're going to bring you a podcast covering all things related to data ops and the people that are making data ops what it is today. If you've not yet done so, please be sure to look up and subscribe to the dataops.live YouTube channel. That's where you're going to find all the recordings from our past episodes. So if you missed any of our prior episodes, you can catch up there. Better yet, go to truedataops.org and subscribe to this podcast. Then you'll be sure not to miss any of the future episodes. Now, my guest today is industry analyst, advisor, consultant, and the founder and CEO of Bark, Dr. Karsten Bonger. I almost said it right. I got close. Welcome, Karsten.
Kent, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So for the folks who don't know you, can you give us a little bit about your background in data management and what you all do over there at Bark?
Absolutely. Yeah, I founded Bark 25 years ago, so quite a while in the industry. I founded it as an industry analyst, meaning that we look at all the vendors in our space, but we are specialized on the data analytics space. So we are not an analyst trying to cover all software segments or even more, but we only do data and analytics. And being an advisor to clients or users, we help them to make the right decisions, meaning on data strategy, on architectural choices, but also especially on technology selection, since that's our core area we look at.
Hey, so what does BARC stand for? I assume it stands for something, and maybe in German?
No, it's in English. It's a business application research center, and it alludes to our roots. Basically, we started this as a project at a university, at a chair for information science. We created a test lab for business intelligence software. This is now back in 1998.
Wow.
And so we were comparing all the great solutions that were out there at that time. So I'm talking about Arbor S-Space. I'm talking about Cognos, PowerPlay, and Holos, and all the good stuff. And so we are creating this test lab. And basically, the idea was to try to help enterprises make an informed decision on software. And this went very well. So people, we published this first in books and then later as studies. And then companies came and said, well, this is great. This really helps us in this intransparent marketplace to get an idea what the software is really useful for, where the strengths and weaknesses are. And you, being at university, you are truly independent and neutral, yeah, and can really help us. And you have no interest in selling our software as most other people that tell us about software. Mm-hmm. And this is what we definitely maintained. Yeah? So we maintained this independence from the software vendors and also from the interest of selling a big consulting project to implement it. So that's what we are not doing. But we focus on this evaluation of technology and helping our clients to make the right decisions here.
And you have a very interesting event that you do every year, right?
Yeah, you are talking about the retreat where you also participated once. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an industry event. We run the largest events for or on data and analytics in the German-speaking countries. That's our core market for events. And the one you are talking about is a very specific one. That's like a vendor workshop. So we are bringing together analysts from all over the world and vendors on the other side that we brief on trends. We are seeing changes in buying behavior on the user side. We bring in investors that talk about their view on the market, and we have a big discussion or great discussion going. Yeah, what trends do we observe, and how does the industry react in terms of how do users and buyers of software react to changes? And how do the vendors react or should react to that? That makes it very unique, I think, as a gathering of vendor executives. And with that, it's always astonishing what a brain pool, in a way, we have in the room. Yeah, many of the attendees with 20, 30, maybe even more years of experience in our industry. So that always makes a very good discussion and a great strategy workshop, if you want to call it
that. Yeah, and that's great. So that's really kind of how BART stays up with the trends and what's happening, and knowing what vendors are thinking about and where they're going to go in the space, so that you can advise, you know, basically everybody, the rest of us, as to what's going on out there. You probably have a better insight than a lot of people do, because you're getting that kind of cross section of the industry by having vendors and analysts and investors all together.
Yeah, exactly. So we are following around 400 vendors in the space. Around, let's say, 100 to 150 more closely, in a way that we get briefed by them or we have a frequent interaction with them. So that's like the larger vendors in our space. And then we have another like 300, 250 that we know what they're doing, and we have an idea, yeah, where they're positioned in the market. So that's quite a lot to cover. But I think what's really good for us is to have also this end user exposure. So really working with them on their requirements, understanding them, what use cases do they actually try to solve, also getting their feedback from proof of concepts, from the actual implementation. So what works with the software was not, where were they disappointed, what looked good on PowerPoint, what didn't work in practice, and so on.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, you know, data products is one of those hot industry buzzwords that's been going around at, every conference, you know, every other blog post that's out there, every other podcast is talking about it, including ours. So what's your take on that concept, and, you know, what it means, and, you know, how does it really fit in our, I'll say, modern data landscape that we're dealing with for analytics?
Yeah, I think you can take different views on that. First of all, I think we see that it became quite popular with the data mesh concept. And that's we define data mesh as an organizational concept, and data fabric would be more a term that's often used in relation to that, but we would say this is more the technical
right.
implementation. Yeah. So data mesh as an organizational concept also calls for data products that are developed in a decentralized fashion, yeah, in the domains. And we see that this made this whole idea of data products quite popular, but it has been around before. So we were talking about data products and the good ideas behind this concept already before the data mesh concept was out. So I think It's basically the question and the idea: how can we make data more accessible across the organization? That's one thing. The second thing is that we see many problems with running data and analytics projects, yeah, or trying to get something done, let's put it that way, in data and analytics. If you have a project-oriented approach, yeah, we all know about the deficiencies here, the problems, yeah. And one, for example, is that it has an end, which basically
that's not right.
I mean, we are in the data, yeah, and we are in the data ops podcast. So if you want to operationalize something, obviously you cannot have an end, but you have to have an ongoing process. And that's not only true for data pipelines, but that's basically true for everything. Yeah, even if you build a dashboard. From day one, you will have changes. You will have new requirements. You have people asking for different things. And so that's one of the biggest problems. The second idea in data projects that we see that resonates very well is this idea of end-to-end responsibility. Yeah. So if we do it right, we end this endless discussion on whose fault it was that something's going wrong. Yeah. Is it the requirements? Is it the IT implementation? Yeah. So people are arguing who made the mistake and are ignoring that basically, in my belief is in data and analytics, we will never find a user that can actually express what they really want. Yeah. So, and plus, any requirement will change extremely quickly. So these two things together will lead to an approach, or we have to have an approach that is always incorporating iteration, changes, and that quickly. So it needs to be agile.
Right. I was just going to say, you're talking my language here on agile, because you know, I got into doing agile data warehousing back in the early 2000s when people weren't even talking about that. And the concept of having a product owner and a prioritized backlog and all of those sorts of things really allowed my teams to be more successful, right? As we thought about it that way, like you said, there was end to end. That product owner was from the business, and they bore as much responsibility on the outcome and the quality of the outcome as we did as the IT team that was, you know, building the ETL and the data warehouses and all of that sort of thing. But it really became, you know, that team effort. It was much more of a team effort. And I think the data products concepts, as they're being discussed now today, more so, thanks again, like you said, to Data Mesh, having that product mindset is very different. You know, you think about Ford, right? They don't just build one car and that's it, and they do the same thing forever. It's obviously evolved and changed over time, and you know, cars break down and have to be repaired, and they have to say, is there a better way we could engineer that so it doesn't have to be repaired all the time? And in the agile world, we call that technical debt and refactoring. So yeah, no, I agree with you. I think this is it's not completely new, but it's gotten, I'll say, new life and maybe some new focus as a result of all these recent discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some discussion around what actually a data product is, some definitions. We prefer a broader one. Yeah? So we think also, for example, data or dashboards, yeah, or applications that are data or analytics rich. Yeah, we would also say that's a data product, but I mean, in the end, it doesn't matter. It has to help us to bring data to life, yeah, to make it easier to share it across an organization, and all the good ideas in data products like ownership, like also modularization, I think is super important. And all these things really bring us forward and help us overcome problems that we have with a more traditional project-oriented approach.
Yeah, you mentioned data ops. Like you said, obviously this is a data ops podcast. So what's your perspective on data ops processes and how this, you know, really fits into all of this? Data products or not?
Exactly. No matter how you call it. But what we see also in our research, we talked about our approach to help clients directly in a more advisory consulting fashion. But our biggest area of our business is actually the research side. So we do a lot of empirical research, so primary research in our market to understand better what's going on. And what we see consistently over years now is that the one of the biggest problems that the professionals have or the practitioners have is the actual operationalization, very difficult word, of anything they do. Yeah. And so getting to a pilot or before that, getting to a proof of concept is typically not so hard. But taking the last mile, the last step of bringing it really to life in an operational context into the processes, that's the really hard thing. And this is consistent over the years. Yeah, and we see that data ops next to any other ops, especially ML ops, that has been a top of mind for some years now with the rise of more AI or data science related projects or products, has really helped to focus on the processes and tasks at hand that you need to do to operationalize. Yeah, to make that successful. And it starts, I think, with a mindset, yeah, that you understand, okay, there is something to be done. There is a problem that we need to solve. And secondly, obviously, I mean, you have your approach there, yeah, how to do it, what steps to take, what to take care of. But I think the key thing is here is that operationalization is a big challenge. And we need to really have a very close look at it, how we can solve it, how we can overcome it in projects.
Yeah. So how do you see the role of automation, you know, maybe even AI-driven automation for data ops and the importance of it?
Well, I mean, automation is key. We have to automate because we see, obviously, also on a general term, we see data volumes rising. We see the frequency of data integration, let's say, decreasing in terms of, it's going down to real time, instead of having seconds, minutes, days to integrate data. We see often complexity rising in terms of what, for example, needs to be calculated along the way, what needs to be done. We see an increasing amount of external data to be integrated into data landscape, which typically also increases things like you have to have more quality checks, for example. You don't have control over the schema anymore. Yeah. So things that are adding to complexity. So all this leads to an higher challenge in a way. And this is where automation comes into play, because trying to solve will simply not work.
Yeah, and one of our key pillars in the seven pillars of True Data Ops is automated testing and monitoring. And I think that's what you were just alluding to there. Yeah, with especially if you don't have control of the data, you're getting third party data. How do you make sure that, again, we're still dealing with, and we'll deal with, garbage in, garbage out, making sure that we're getting the right kind of data, the right quality of data, and not having things break in our operational pipelines.
Yeah, exactly. So quality is a constant concern, and basically it will ever be. I completely agree. And we do a lot of these empirical research, and data quality always comes top if you ask about challenges, wherever, in machine learning, in BI, in data management, it doesn't matter. So we always ask the question, but when do we actually solve this challenge? Yeah. But the good news is I do see more initiatives in data governance. Yeah, I do see companies taking a bit more care about it and thinking about it, and also taking action, meaning actually allocating resources, actually being more serious about tackling this problem. So I have a little bit of hope that this will get better, and that more and more companies understand that if they really think that data is an asset and that it really contributes to their business strategy, or positively influences their business strategy, then that they also have to take care about this asset. So if we see more and more companies being serious about that, then I have a bit of hope that we also finally tackle this data quality topic.
Yeah. So what do you think is driving companies to actually be thinking about this more, the governance and quality aspects of data management?
I think it's the strategic importance of data and analytics has increased, I think, significantly. It used to be more an afterthought. Yeah, some data that comes out of our main systems, the ERP systems or others, and that needs to be reported. But if it's not working properly, it's not a big problem. Yeah, our core processes are still running. That used to be the case. Now it's different. Yeah, we see more and more processes that rely on data that cannot work any way without data. So I think the strategic importance is higher. I think it's also a maturity topic, that we have more and more companies being more mature about how to handle data, how to think about data, and that they now really see, as a current example, Gen AI got all this hype. And what happened? No wonder, after like 6 or 12 months, people or companies started to realize, it's again the same topic. If whatever we feed these models is garbage, then we will have no good results. And so I think it's again a little bit adding to the maturity here that we need to take care of the data first.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of urgency too, because people are wanting to jump on the Gen AI bandwagon. And like you said, they realize, like, well, you have to feed that, whether, we've been talking about machine learning and AI for a number of years now, and that's still been the same thing. You have to train the model. And what are you training the model with? Where is that data coming from that you're training the model with? And what's the quality of that data is very important if you're, trying to develop one of these things and you want the results to be useful and accurate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in your, you have a podcast called Data Culture, the Data Culture Podcast. And in that podcast, you say data culture eats data strategy for breakfast. So could you explain a little bit of what that means and, you know, the importance of having a strong data culture for success? And, you know, what is a strong data culture from your perspective? What does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So the quote you just used is obviously taken from a pretty famous quote in management literature. Yeah, that says culture eats strategy for breakfast, meaning any type of strategy you want to, or business strategy you want to implement in your organization. If the culture of an organization is not supporting it, then it will fail. And I think the same is true for data. So if you have a data strategy, but your data culture in an organization is not supporting it, then again, yeah, it will be to no avail. You have great thoughts what you could achieve, but in the end, you will not be able to achieve it. Yeah. So what is data culture? It's the things that you cannot really see and define clearly. So typically we say it's the values, the beliefs, the behaviors, yeah, within an organization that promote the effective and ethical use of data. So that's data culture, and it's part of the company culture. So whatever you know and see and feel about a company culture is typically also reflecting on a data culture. Yeah. So it's, I always compare it in a way, if you walk, or if you're a new employee in an organization, you get a lot of things in a structured and formal way, like an employee handbook and in a process description and so on. But then there's also this informal thing. That's the culture of the organization. Yeah. And you feel that very quickly. It takes maybe a few days or weeks, and then you understand what type of organization it is. Is it very hierarchical or not? Yeah. What type of, how are decisions being made? How are people treating each other? How are people treating their customers? And often that's not really written down, but it's really more a set of values, of beliefs, of how things are being done. Yeah, so, and why do I think it's important? Because we see that these more people-related aspects of how data is being used are equally important to any strategy you have in terms of, yeah, you think about use cases and how you support the business strategy, you think about technology, what you want to use, and so on and so on. But if you forget about the people that in the end actually would have to use the technology, make it work, use the results of any type of data processing that we do, then you will fail. That's the hard statement here. That's why data culture is so important, and to be really focusing on that as a major success factor next to your business-related data strategy, your technology-related data strategy. That's the statement here, and that's why I called my podcast Data Culture Podcast, because we in terms of also now close to 100 guests think that it's super important, and we want to help people that want to address the topic how they can actually do that.
Yeah, I like the fact that you're part of your definition of data culture is effective and ethical use of data. That's definitely become the ethics of data usage has certainly become a much hotter topic with the advent of AI and Gen AI in particular. I was at the Data Universe conference in New York last week, and they actually had one stage that was kind of dedicated to talks about ethical use of data and putting ethics policies together and things like that. And it's a very important conversation that in many ways has been, I think, inferred in organizations in the past, but not necessarily directly discussed other than in terms of compliance with things like GDPR and CCPA. But that's more of a regulatory compliance discussion. It's not really an ethics discussion. And you know, I think the conversation is changing a little bit now, thankfully.
Yeah, absolutely. I see the same. It has started maybe 5 years ago with the advent of AI that came top of mind with all the data scientist discussions and so on. So more companies were investing in more AI. And here, very quickly, we had these discussions and also these prominent examples of bias in data and then what could come out of it, and or what bad results basically could come out of it. And we had the we run an event called the Data Festival in Munich each year, and we had this like 5 years ago already, first companies going on stage and saying, well, okay, we need to have a guideline for our data scientists how to treat data, yeah, and how to make sure that the outcome, for example, the models they are building are actually working ethically correct. Yeah, so I think that was the first time this was really starting, and now it's definitely accelerating with, especially with the European Union AI Act, that is now becoming real. And now we see that in many organizations, they start to really look at it because they understand something's coming. Yeah, there's a regulatory pressure coming, and so they need to take care of it. Yeah, so I think that even accelerated this discussion and the process here.
Yeah, so our, you know, I'll say our traditional data management practices of governance and privacy are kind of expanding, right? And so now we're having to include things like ethical use of the data. I mean, to me, that's a governance question, right? Is how are we using the data? What kind of data are we producing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, is that in line with what I guess as an organization we believe is ethical according to our organizational values?
Exactly. Yeah.
Which means you got to have a data culture defined, right? Otherwise, you don't know what those are. You can't answer those questions.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's where things come together.
Ah, yeah. Oh, good. Very good. Well, let's see. We're kind of coming up on our time now. What are you looking forward to for the rest of 2024?
Well, in the data world.
In the data world.
Okay. I mean, there are many things happening that will have an effect. Right now, the discussion is still a bit overlaid by Gen AI, I think. That dominated a lot of discussions. But what I think is positive is that it gets now more down to earth in terms of the question, what can we actually do? And we do see a big gap in what is possible and what potentially could be done and what is actually being done in organizations, in companies. Yeah, so there's a very big adoption gap. And that's, I think, this year will be the year where things have to happen. Yeah. So where anyone involved in Gen AI in whatever fashion will have to deliver. Yeah? And that, I think, it will be super interesting because, as usual, there are a lot of promises, but there will also be a lot of tiers of things that will not deliver the results that people thought they would. And so I think this will be super interesting to observe this year. Second thing is, as we all know, in data and analytics, there are many things that Gen AI will not solve. Yeah, well, will not actually advance things. If you think about calculations, yeah, let's say the core analytics. But I'm super interested to see what happens in terms of an innovation side. Yeah, so I mean, there are already announcements like from, or I read about OpenAI saying, well, the GPT-5 will have major improvements, for example, in analyzing data, yeah, or capabilities to analyze data. So I'm super interested to see what will happen there. And then, I mean, we have advances in on all levels. I think the increased automation on the one side and increased user friendliness, yeah, in using any type data management solutions, BI, dashboarding, reporting, whatever. I think how this plays out is one of the most interesting things. Yeah, so how now software vendors adapt these new capabilities. And again, most of what we have seen so far is slideware. So vendors announcing what they want to do. And most of them promise to deliver something this year. 24, I think, will be the year where we see how Gen AI for data and analytics will actually be visible in products, in actual products.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because I think the popularity of Gen AI and even things just like ChatGPT is driving that question of why can't my analytics platform be this easy to use, right?
Yeah.
And so we're really, again, hopefully taking another big leap forward in our attempts to, as we've been saying for several decades, democratize data, democratize analytics. You don't have to be a highly technical individual in order to get value out of the data, that we can have, you know, business people who are running the business get use from that data without having to call somebody in IT to make something happen.
Exactly. And
that's very exciting.
Yeah, it is. And that, by the way, that will also drive data culture. Yeah, because if it's easier, then you have an easier probability to actually have it spread out in the organization.
Yeah, and there'll be more adoption. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, great. So what's next on the list for you? Do you have any conferences or meetups or anything coming up in the next couple of months before you hit summer vacation period there in Europe?
Yes. So we, first of all, what's really top of mind for us is our US expansion. We are investing a lot in the US. We have now 3 people on the ground, and the team is growing. And that's super exciting for us, because our ambition is to be the leading global analyst company specialized on data and analytics. And that's a major step forward to do that.
Yeah, we had one of your colleagues on here a couple of months ago.
I know, Sean. Sean was with you.
Yeah.
That's great. And so that's definitely a big thing for us. Then in 4 weeks' time, we run the biggest trade show for data analytics in the German-speaking countries. That's the Big Data and AI World in Frankfurt. So that's definitely keeping us quite busy. And then we have some events focused on finance. And the next one that has a global impact will be the Data Festival Online. We do it once in Munich and one in online. That will be in November, so a bit of time. But that has a pretty big global audience.
Awesome. So what's the best way for folks to connect with you if they want to follow up on this and follow what you're doing and see the announcements for all these events?
Yeah, follow me on LinkedIn. That's, I think, the best source to see what's going on. And obviously, we also have bark.com as a web page where you can see what research is available and what we are doing.
Okay, so that's BARC.com, right?
Exactly.
And then there's your LinkedIn QR code for folks. That's your quickest way to link up with Carsten. Make sure when you send him a connect message that you tell him you saw him here on the True Data Ops podcast, so he'll know how you found him. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today, Carsten. It was a great talk. Thanks for everybody online for joining us, and hope you got some value out of this conversation. Be sure to join me again in 2 weeks when I'm going to be live from Stowe, Vermont at the Worldwide Data Vault Conference. I'll be talking with Cohen Verheyen and Sean Johnson from Vault Speed. They happen to be one of our Data Ops Live automation partners. So we were talking about automation earlier. So I'm going to talk to a couple folks about that in 2 weeks. Now, note that this is actually a live event, as in person. I mean, all our events are generally live, but I'm going to actually be in the same room with these guys. I did this last year, so it'll be the second in person, I guess I should say in person rather than live, in person interview with the folks from Vault Speed up there in Vermont. But because it's live, we had to make a couple of adjustments because we're right in the middle of a conference there. And so we're going to be 1 hour earlier than normal. So make sure you make a note of that on your calendar. It'll be 1 hour earlier when we do that event. But the announcements will be coming out here on Facebook. Yeah, on LinkedIn. And you can obviously register that way and you'll get the notifications. So as always, be sure to like the replays from today's show, tell your friends about the True Data Ops podcast, and don't forget to go to truedataops.org, subscribe to the podcast to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes. So thanks again, everyone. Until next time, this is Kent Graziano, the Data Warrior, signing off for now.